You are Locked On Giants, your daily podcast on the New York Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giants fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants. I'm Ed Valentine of Big Blue View, along with co-host Pat Traina of Forbes, The Athletic, Sports Exchange, Journal Inquirer, Inside Football, Big Blue View, and a host of other places. Patty, how you doing as we get through a weekend here?
Doing well, Ed. Had an opportunity to also do some radio today, you know, as we record this show. So just, you know, talking Giants whenever I get a chance and just enjoying it.
You never stop, Patty. You just never stop.
Nah, listen. I'll stop when I dead. When I'm dead.
The Energizer Bunny of Giants football writers. Oh, Patty, let's dive into talking about our New York Giants here, folks. I thought what we'll do today is we'll probably focus on Friday's game against the Jets. We'll break down offense, defense, and special teams, you know, with some thoughts on what we saw, maybe a little bit of insight toward roster construction. We don't want to dive too deeply into our thoughts on the 53-man roster today, but we'll break down as much as we can in Friday's game and where we think things stand at this point. So, Patty, with that said, let's start with the offense. And I will give you the floor at this point, you know, for a couple of thoughts, just maybe on the offense just to get us started.
Well, I think we have to start with the running game, which wasn't very strong, I guess, to put it nicely, against the Jets. And it's interesting because I just posted an article on Forbes. I did some film study on that. And I actually asked Pat Shermer about this yesterday on our conference call. But the Jets had an interesting strategy in that they basically loaded the box on just about every play. And by loading the box, they had their safeties up in the box. And by doing that, that's where you really want to have good communication amongst your offensive linemen. You want to have someone who's going to make the calls, the correct calls, and just kind of, you know, make sure that everybody gets blocked that needs to get blocked. And, you know, I only went through really, you know, the first team, but from what I could tell, it looked to me like there were some communication issues. It looked like there were and I'm guessing here because obviously I don't know the line calls, but just based on how the blocking developed, it looked like there might have been a line call or two that didn't quite pan out the way you would have liked it to. And as a result, the running backs really had no place to run. Now, before anybody jumps all over me and says, oh, she's getting ready to defend Jonathan Stewart was also a part of the problem, obviously. The thing I did not like from him was that fumble and how he did not keep both hands on the ball as he was going down in traffic. I mean, I think coaches preach that you keep two hands on the ball when you're being swarmed like that, and that was just, you know, that's on Stewart. There's no, you know, defending him about that. But, you know, it's interesting because when I asked Pat Shermer about the, you know, the running game, And you also, I think, got a question in there about Jonathan Stewart. And I think Shermer said something to the effect of, it's not always what it seems. And just, again, looking at the film and not knowing what the line calls were supposed to be, I'm just guessing. But it looked like there were some problems up front that trickled down, not just with Stewart, but also with Wayne Gallman, who, you know, has looked so good the first 2 weeks of the preseason, but yet who had a struggle against the Jets.
Patty, as I think about, you know, Shermer's conference call yesterday, the thing that he said, and I think, as you said, it might have been in response to a question that you asked, he talked about a couple of occasions where offensive linemen either didn't get to the second level quickly enough, you know, and what happens a lot of times is, you know, you have these combo blocks where guys have to, You know, they have to get the lineman in front of them, and then they have to get a linebacker or a corner or someone. And he talked about that, and he also, I do think he kind of hinted at the communication issue, simply because he did kind of say that he thought there were a couple of occasions where the wrong guys were getting blocked.
Mm-hmm. And you can see that. You can definitely see that. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but one play in particular that I dissected on the Forbes article was, I think it was a 5-yard loss by Wayne Gallman. And what happened on that play, it looked like Patrick Omame just totally whiffed on his guy. But if you look at the diagram that I put on that article, you can see there's like a humongous gap there. And you wonder if maybe John Jalapio did not make the right line protection call to where now Omame had to try and block Leonard Williams with his back to the sideline, which you never want to see an offensive lineman do. You want to see him facing the end zone, and Omame on that play was actually facing the sideline. And of course he was not going to have any chance of stopping Williams. Williams is a fast player, shot that gap, and it was a big gap. And if you look at that diagram, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Patty, I also wrote about that particular play at Big Blue View, and you point out the fact that as you watch the play, it does look like Omame is the one, the way the play, you know, the way that the play unfolded, it looks like Omame is the one who has responsibility, you know, for Williams. But as I look at that, I'm like, Williams is lined up on Jalapio's left shoulder, which means he's away from Omame. The play is going to the Giants' left, and there's just no way that Omame's going to get there. It's just not possible.
Yeah, and again, that could go back to the line call. You know, again, we won't know, and it's funny because after the game, I went to John Jalapio, who's really good. I mean, he's always willing to you know, give what he can, but one of the things the players can't tell you is what the line calls were. They're not allowed to disclose that to the media. And, you know, again, if I had to put money down on it, I would say that there was a miscommunication with the line call that didn't put Omame in the right position to make that block. But that's just my uninformed, uneducated guess.
You know, Patty, I do want to get to Jonathan Stewart a little bit, but the last thing I will say is that you and I both like and appreciate John Jalapio. I certainly appreciate his story, his journey to the NFL. You know, he's bounced around to a number of teams, to practice squads, to playing in one of the several secondary football leagues, you know, that have cropped up over the years. I think he did two stints in one of those leagues, the name of which escapes me at this point. But I continue to come back to, as I think about it, I continue to come back to the idea, to the concern that I think the center position is going to be a problem for the Giants this year. I really do.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ed. I like John Jalapio. I appreciate his blue-collar work ethic, which you like to see on your offensive line. But, you know, I've seen, and not just in this game, but there have been instances where I have suspected the line call has not been what it should have been. And, you know, on a first glance, we look and we say, oh, you know, Omame had a crappy game. And then, you know, when you go back and you look at the film, you say, maybe it wasn't on him. Maybe, you know, this is why it happened. And, you know, I just feel, and I can't figure this out, maybe the Giants just want to see what John Jalapio can bring to the table. But, you know, I just find it odd that Brett Jones hasn't really gotten an opportunity with the first team offense, and above all, they haven't tried him at guard, which is kind of, you know, a head scratcher. They've worked him mostly at center. So I'm just wondering what the thinking is behind there. And I think at some point I might try and get that question into Pat Shurmur, but I just find that a very, very unusual approach, considering that, you know, you ideally want your center and your guard, you know, your center to be able to play some guard as well. And really, they haven't given Brett Jones that opportunity.
No, they haven't, Patty, and it would be interesting to hear Pat Shurmur's response to that. But I did want to talk about Jonathan Stewart for a second. Everybody knows, you know, what we've seen from Stewart, you know, in the preseason. The numbers, I believe, are 10 carries for minus 9 yards. We haven't seen a whole lot of explosion. And when we talked to Pat Shurmur about that the other day, you know, he admitted, he said, when you look at the numbers, he said, you just believe that they're terrible. He said, but the Giants believe that, you know, Jonathan Stewart, you know, is still a good football player. In fact, he said, you know, for those of you who would like to see Stewart not be part of the 53-man roster, I think you can forget that. You know, Shurmur said the Giants are counting on Jonathan Stewart, you know, being the player that he's been. You know, in Stewart's defense on some of these runs, you're not going to get yards when there's two or three guys in the backfield pretty much as soon as you touch the ball. I'm a little concerned about Jonathan Stewart as well. You know, I've written that at Big Blue View. I think you have to be concerned until he shows a little bit more quickness, until he shows the ability to make somebody miss and shows you a little bit of production. But I think that that a lot of that negative yardage is not on Jonathan Stewart or on Wayne Gallman or any of the running backs.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, the only thing that really concerns me about Jonathan Stewart, and I go back to earlier in training camp when he got a couple of days off that I don't believe were injury related, but, you know, they gave him some time off. And usually when they give a player, you know, a couple days off or a day off from practice, and I'm thinking in terms of Damon Harrison here, it's usually a maintenance type of deal. And I just found that a little bit, you know, I raised an eyebrow when I saw that, especially because if I remember correctly, with Stewart, it lasted 2 days that they gave him some time, you know, away from the game. And at the time they said, oh, it's to give the other guys an opportunity. But, you know, look, if you want to get all these guys in, you'll find a way to do it. And I just wonder if they were maybe trying to, I don't know if preserve is the right word, but save Stewart for the season. Because you and I have talked about this. I think Stewart's role ultimately is going to be as a short yardage and a goal line back. I don't think he's going to be the guy that comes in to relieve Barkley, you know, after every so many series. I think that's going to be Wayne Gallman. Wayne Gallman has earned that right as far as I'm concerned. And I think Stewart is going to be a specialist in that running game. You know, we can look at the contract and say, oh, the Giants outbid themselves on the contract, but, you know, it is what it is at this point. And I just don't, you know, off the top of my head, I don't think they're going to save a whole lot if they were to terminate that contract.
Patty, let's turn away from, you know, Stewart and the running game a little bit. Let's talk about what was a better topic or a happier topic to discuss on the offense on Friday night, and that was the play of Eli Manning and the Giants' success in the passing game. You know, I've said for a long time now that if you give Eli, you know, the opportunity to set his feet, to go through his progressions, if you give him, you know, the opportunity to survey the field, that Eli Manning can still play. And, you know, you don't want to go, you know, over the top on one game. But I think that's what we saw Friday night. He was comfortable in the pocket. He had, you know, he had time. He was able to go through some progressions with the various route combinations and things that the Giants ran. He was able to find open receivers down the field. He showed, you know, really good arm strength on the long pass to Cody Latimer. I was also really happy to see lots of play action, which is something that I always thought that under Kevin Gilbride, Eli Manning did really well. I was also interested and also happy to see Pat Shurmur move the pocket a few times, you know, just to give the defense some different looks and to give Eli an opportunity, you know, to throw without guys in his face.
Yeah, you know, and I think also what helped Eli Manning is, again, going back to what the Jets did against the run, they brought their safeties up into the box, so that created a lot of one-on-one opportunities down the field with the receivers and the tight ends. But, you know, the pass blocking, you know, if we're going to kill the offensive line for the run blocking, we got to throw them a bouquet of roses for the pass blocking, which I thought was a lot better, you know, in terms of that aspect of the game. So, yeah, seeing Eli being able to, you know, set up, set his feet, make his reads, go through his progressions, and then, you know, fire the ball off. I mean, he made some really nice throws. He also had a long throw there that, you know, I thought was you know, put to shame any of those thoughts that, oh, Eli can't throw the deep ball anymore. So it was good to see. It's a start. You know, I'm not ready to say that the old Eli is back just yet, but, you know, it was certainly an encouraging development.
You know, I won't say, you know, the old Eli is back either, but the encouraging thing that I saw, you know, Friday night, in addition to, you know, as we talked about the pass protection, and he had a really nice completion percentage. We thought we were going to see this, you know, but what we saw on Friday was a willingness by the Giants to throw the football down the field. I mean, it's not necessarily, you know, just go back and chuck it as far as you can, but there was the deep shot to Cody Latimer. There was a deep shot to Sterling Shepard. There were some, you know, some more throws in the intermediate area of the field, you know, than we've seen in the past couple of years. And for me, you know, that type of throw has always been a strength of Eli Manning, and I was glad to see, you know, that as we had kind of suspected, it looks like that type of pass is going to be, you know, a big part of what the Giants are going to do this year.
Yeah, I like what Pat Shurmur has done with this offense. I mean, he has come in, and it's not about necessarily, this is my system, and you're going to fit into it come heck or high water. It's about, this is what we are looking to do. We're going to try and play this to your strengths. And he's done that so far. And I think when you do that, when you're flexible enough to play to a player's strength, and you can kind of see that Shurmur's offense has actually got, you know, it's got elements of that West Coast concept that he's run, but it also has elements of what Mike Shula ran down in Carolina. And it's been a very, you know, good mix so far.
Yes, it has. Patty, let's take a quick break, and then we will come back and we will turn our attention to what we saw on defense on Friday. All right, Patty, let's, as we promised before we took our break there, let's turn our attention to the defensive side of the ball, and I will give you the floor again to offer some quick thoughts as to your overall impressions on the play of the Giants defense.
Well, I'm going to go to the secondary, and I'm going to start off with the play of the free safety, and it's funny because I was just, before we started recording, I went back and I was doing some film study, and I also looked at the transcript because Pat Shurmur was asked about the free safety spot, and he said that position's a little bit more settled than maybe, you know, those of us on the outside think it is. And I think the reason why that position, you know, why Shurmur would say that is because if you look at the film, how many times do you actually see the free safety in the frame? It's not very often. It's kind of weird, you know. But James Betcher plays that free safety so deep that he's often not in the frame when you try and break down the film. And I'm just wondering if, you know, maybe that's because he's trusting the front guys to get, you know, to rush the passer, and he's trusting the cornerbacks to cover, and that free safety is actually truly a last resort to where, you know, he's not afraid to play him deep enough. So in that case, you probably want to get a guy who can run, which Curtis Riley has shown he can do. And, you know, Curtis Riley, in terms of his NFL rating, I think he's got the best out of Thompson, William Gay, who has played at that position, and Andrew Adams, who, again, I say is still a strong safety, not a free safety. So I think there's some clarity that's developing there. And again, that's just my guess as to why Shurmur would say that. The position I'm still concerned about is at cornerback, though, because, you know, you've got Janoris Jenkins, who teams just haven't really attacked. You've got Eli Apple, who has his moments. And then you're still trying to figure out who's the depth behind those guys. You know, B.W. Webb has been playing the slot cornerback, but he got beat on that Terrell Pryor 10-yard touchdown run. I'm sorry, touchdown reception that you know, left B.J. Goodson trying to track him down in coverage. You know, Grant Haley has had his moments. Leonard Johnson, whom they picked up late in training camp, you know, they tried him there, and I'm not sure where he fits in. So I just feel like there's still a lot of unsettled business at the bottom of the depth chart at cornerback.
I think you're right on both counts here, Patty. We saw B.W. Webb, you know, get beat for that touchdown. We saw Dante Dion play quite a bit in the slot in the second half. I still believe, you know, that there is a question as to, you know, as to which one of those guys might actually play more in the slot, you know, once the regular season begins. Still think there's a question, you know, or a possibility that, you know, when push comes to shove and roster cuts get made, you know, that the Giants will look to add a player, you know, at corner. I'm just not, as you know, as you indicated, we entered, you know, the OTAs in the spring and training camp as well. We entered with a question about depth at corner, and I think we're going to leave the preseason with the same question.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, just like they will at offensive tackle, I think they're going to really scour that waiver wire to see if they can pick somebody up.
Oh, definitely. Patty, let's also look at, you know, the play of the front seven as well. And I just wanted to mention, I mean, two guys. We haven't really talked a whole lot about Olivier Vernon, but, you know, Vernon has had a really, really good preseason. You know, I'm sorry, but teams are going to figure out that they're not going to be able to block him with tight ends. He absolutely demolished a Jets tight end on his way to Sam Darnold on one play Friday night. And, you know, we all had questions about how he would transition to the linebacker position. And I don't know about you, Patty, but when it comes to Olivier Vernon, I'm not worried about him at all anymore.
No, I never was. I mean, because if you think about it, you know, what they're asking him to do now is actually going to benefit him because it takes him away from locking horns with offensive tackles. Because we've talked about this before. Vernon is not your prototypical size for a defensive end. I mean, he's made it work, but he's not a big man considered, you know, when you compare him to other prototypical defensive ends. So when you lock him up against an offensive tackle, sometimes you can, you know, neutralize him. I mean, he'll fight you and he'll win his share of battles. But, you know, I just think it's better. It's a better matchup if they can get him against the tight end, because as you said, he absolutely destroys tight ends. They can't get him blocked. And, you know, my concern with Vernon is that right now he is playing so well and he is probably the one legitimate pass rusher that they still have. I mean, we're still looking for that other pass rusher to step up. I'm just concerned he's going to get the Michael Strahan treatment where he gets 2-3 guys blocking him, and now, you know, what's going to happen with the rest of the pass rush? I mean, if that happens, then I think that's, you know, a plus, because it should open up, you know, one-on-one opportunities for other guys. But yeah, I think Vernon has been an absolute monster this year. He, you know, or this summer. I think, you know, if they can figure out a way so that they don't, so that he doesn't end up with 2 or 3 guys blocking him, he can put up some tremendous stats. But you know, it's been nice to see him come about. And you know, the other thing, and I think you went with me at the practice that we saw, Vernon is always working. He's not a prima donna. You know, you see him when they're doing special teams, he's off on another field running sprints back and forth, constantly working, constantly grinding, and just, you know, goes about his business in a very quiet, workmanlike way.
Yes, he does, Patty. And you mentioned the idea of, you know, guys beyond Vernon, you know, being or stepping up as pass rushers. And what I thought about when you mentioned that was the fact that we haven't seen Connor Barwin for quite a while now. I mean, the Giants said that he wasn't practicing, I believe, after the first preseason game, that he wasn't practicing because of soreness. And I think it's apparent at this point that there's more than soreness going on with Connor Barwin. So, you know, hopefully we'll see him at least back out on the practice field this week. But his lengthy absence at this point has me a little bit concerned.
It has me concerned as well. I saw somewhere, and I maybe I shouldn't even mention this, I somebody actually attached what the soreness was. So I'm not gonna repeat it because it's not a confirmed source. But you know, you're right. Soreness generally goes away in a day or two, or three at the most. And I just, it's got to be something else that's stopping him from getting on the field. I'm wondering if it's a lower body injury, just based on what I've seen him do on the side with trainers. It looks like they're working on, it could be a hip or a knee or an ankle. I'm not sure, but just based on the exercises they have him doing, it to me, it looks like a lower body issue. But yeah, I'm concerned about him because if this thing continues to linger, and by the way, I don't expect to see him in the final preseason game, but if this thing continues to linger, then you got to ask yourself, you know, gee, do we keep a roster spot open for this guy, or, you know, what do we do here?
Exactly, Patty. And, you know, before we move away from the defense, I did want to say that we just have to mention Kerry Wynn. And the way that, because again on Friday night, you know, Wynn was an impact player, had a sack, I believe, very nearly had a spectacular interception. And the way that I've written it at Big Blue View is, you know, I think we're just all living in Kerry Wynn's world.
Yeah, Kerry Wynn has been the preseason stud. I mean, a special teams, on defense, he's done it all. I mean, he's done everything except, you know, serve food in the press box.
maybe we can work on that.
I think we might have to do that. I mean, heck, he's done everything else, right? You know,
but exactly. Besides, I'm still upset that there were no cookies the other night. Come on.
Your waistline is probably thanking you, Ed.
But still,
you know, Kerry Wynn's been a good story because I got to admit, coming into preseason, I wondered if he would fit into this defense because to me, his skill set is better off for a 4-3 than a 3-4 base. But with that said, we got to remember, James Betcher's defense is multiple. You're going to see some 4-3. You're going to see some 3-4. He's going to ask guys to play different angles and different gaps. And everything he has asked Kerry Wynn to do thus far, Kerry has done a good job with. So, you know, again, this goes back to what I said about Shermer, and I'll apply it to Betcher here. This coaching staff has come in with a plan as far as how they want to deploy personnel, what they want to accomplish, but they have been flexible enough to bend the plan to meet the player's strengths. And I think that is so important, and it's something we didn't necessarily see in the previous regime.
No, Patty, we didn't see that at all. We saw, you know, this is our system. This is what we're going to do. You guys are going to have to learn, you know, this system. And I think that was especially true on the offensive side of the ball, but you know, that's in the past. And I don't think I want to talk about that anymore.
No, but you know, I don't necessarily want to go back to the past either, but it bears mentioning because when you're comparing, people always ask me, well, what are some of the biggest differences between this regime and the previous one? That's a big difference as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, it is. Patty, let's take one more quick break and then we will come back and we will finish up today's show with a little bit of discussion of special teams. Okay, Giants fans, as I said before the break, we'll turn our attention now to special teams. And, you know, Patty, obviously the star of the day on Friday on special teams was Hunter Sharp. But I think that that other than Sharp, there's a lot of other things to talk about there as well.
Well, actually, I think we have to start with Sharp because one of the question marks is that did Hunter Sharp save his job or his roster spot with his 55-yard touchdown? And, you know, as we know, Sharp went on to drop two balls in the game at receiver, both of which were third down conversion attempts. And I know at the time I said, let's pump the brakes here on whether or not Sharp saved himself. But having had the chance to look at the film, having had the chance to look at the stats, and hearing from Pat Shurmur, which is why I kind of hate to tweet during games because, you know, you make these instant analysis and a lot of times you're not accurate. But having done all the three, there is a chance that Sharp saved himself. And I'll tell you why. Because, you know, Shurmur was asked, can you keep a guy on the roster who, you know, doesn't contribute at his position? And he mentioned Marcus Sherrill, who they had at the Vikings, who was a cornerback, but he was the return specialist. And, you know, you got to remember that Shurmur is not McAdoo. He is not Coughlin. He's not thinking the way those two guys thought. Now, with that said, you also have to look at the injury situation. Because sometimes if you have a position that's really banged up, now maybe you can't keep a guy that would be maybe a luxury roster spot, if you will, because you have to keep another guy at another position. Knock on wood, so far the Giants haven't really been in that position, and I realize I probably just jinxed them, but so far so good to where, you know, if they want to keep a luxury player or two, they might be able to pull it off, which is why Shurmur said that. But, you know, I could see a scenario where Sharp does make the roster, even though he has been not very good in games as at receiver. And just, you know, because look, we don't want to see Odell Beckham Jr. returning punts. We don't want to see Saquon Barkley on kickoffs or Sterling Shepard. And if Sharp can get the yardage and make guys miss and, you know, break a few long ones, then I could see making a case to keep him.
Sure, Patty. You know, when you look at the wide receiver depth situation, you look at Hunter Sharp, you look at Khalif Raymond, and we don't know exactly how it's going to break down, but, you know, there's a strong possibility that these two guys who have, you know, very similar skill sets are competing for one job. That, you know, they could well be competing for one roster spot. And, you know, Khalif Raymond had a pretty good game on Friday night as well. He had a 35-yard return. He averaged, I think, 16 or 17 yards on punt returns. But the difference between those two players, and yes, Hunter Sharp had the two drops on Friday, hasn't really contributed all that much, you know, as a receiver. The difference is that Hunter Sharp is a 5'11", 200-pound guy, you know, where, you know, Khalif Raymond is a 5'9", 160-pound guy, and Sharp probably has a better opportunity to contribute as a receiver if the need arises, you know, than a guy like Khalif Raymond would. The other interesting thing that happened on returns was we finally saw Cody Latimer get a kickoff return. That's something we've talked about for a while. And my guess, and I'm thinking yours is probably going to be the same, but my guess is we see Latimer as the first option on kickoff returns once the regular season starts.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think once the regular season starts, you're going to see a lot of kickers just try to put it in the back of the end zone. So there might not be as many returns, even with the changes to the rules on kickoffs. I think the objective is still going to be to put the ball out of the back of the end zone and force the opponent to start on their, you know, on their deep in their own end zone. So, but punt return is really a big thing because that's key. Because if you've got a good punt returner who can get you 10 yards on a return, that puts you in a really, really good position as opposed to a guy who's running backwards or who's struggling to gain yardage. And, you know, how many times last year did we see the Giants lose the starting field position battle because they just could not move the ball on punt returns? It was very frustrating. But with all that said, Ed, you know, you need the other 10 guys to do their job. You know, there were instances where this summer we saw the coverage teams weren't, the punt defense teams or whatever, weren't as proficient as you'd like them to see. There were blocks being missed and whatnot. But, you know, I'm optimistic because they've added Michael Thomas, who's a special teams ace. Ray Armstrong has been phenomenal on special teams. Mark Herzlich is you know, a mainstay on special teams. So they have, to me, a much more solid core group of special teamers who can help those return guys get the yardage that, you know, they need in order to win the field position battle.
You know, I had wanted to get to that idea as well. And when we go back to talk about the Hunter Sharp punt return for a touchdown, I broke that play down a little bit at Big Blue View. And that play was just absolutely beautifully blocked, you know, right from the get-go. You watch Michael Thomas and Eli Apple, who were lined up to block the Jets gunner on the side of the field that the return went to, and they rode him clear across the field to the other side. Janoris Jenkins threw a beautiful block and kept the gunner coming from the other direction off of Sharp. It was a beautiful block by Ray Armstrong. It was a beautiful block at the end by Russell Shepard. You know, the stiff arm by Sharp at the end was very nice, but I looked at the way that play was blocked, and I cannot remember the last time that I saw a return by the Giants that was blocked that well.
I know. It was a culture shock. You were like, wait a minute, am I watching the Giants special teams? It just, you know, just kind of shows you how they, you know, the special teams really kind of went downhill over the recent years. But the personnel has made a difference. I'm not sure just yet how the schemes have factored into that, but you've got guys who, you know, are out there and they're dominating their competition. You know, special teams often comes down to one-on-one battles. And, you know, guys like Michael Thomas are not going to back down. Ray Armstrong is not going to back down. Mark Herzlich is not going to back down. Kerry Wynn has been out there on some of the special teams. He's not going to back down. It just seems like there's a brand new attitude on special teams. And, you know, the key is going to be health because, in the past, and we got to keep, you know, I don't mean to keep going back to the past, but it's for comparison purposes. The coaching staffs would take core guys on special teams off of special teams when injuries popped up. And I always thought that was a mistake. You know, I understand the concept behind it and how you don't want to overplay a guy and whatnot. But you got to remember, these guys are finely tuned, conditional, professional athletes. They are conditioned. They should be able to handle a fairly, you know, reasonable workload. And I always thought it was a mistake when, oh, we have an injury at linebacker, so we've got to take Mark Herzlich off a special team so because he's going to play, you know, linebacker. I thought that was just, you know, I never understood that philosophy. And so far, again, it's not that the Giants have had a lot of injuries where we can compare it, but I don't get the impression that that they're willing to break up the ban on special teams if there's, you know, injuries that necessitate them pulling guys and giving them more snaps on offense or defense.
I would hope not, Patty, because I remember having a conversation about this years ago with Steve Weatherford, and you know, he said that one of the problems that you run into is it's very difficult to organize coverage teams, you know, when you're using guys who just came off the street, guys who just came off the practice squad, guys who who haven't played in NFL games for weeks and weeks, or haven't played, you know, it's late in the season and you've got a guy running down there, it's week 15 and he hasn't played, you know, a snap all season, hasn't been on a roster. So it becomes difficult. So if they can keep these guys, a lot of whom they brought in specifically because they have those special teams backgrounds, Michael Thomas, Russell Shepard, Ray Armstrong is another one. If they can keep those guys out there, those units will be better. But, Patty, you know, we would be remiss if we talked about special teams and didn't talk about Aldrick Rosas. You know, does that guy ever miss in the preseason?
You know, he doesn't, but, you know, unfortunately the preseason doesn't count. But with that said, Aldrick Rosas has had a much, much better preseason. He looks a lot different. And I think one of the things, I'm going off memory here, which is probably not the best thing to do, but if you watch him, his approach to his kickoffs and his field goals, there's a change to it. And I'm trying to kind of articulate what that change is. Let me see if I can find it. Actually, I just wrote it, so I'm just going to pull up the article that I wrote so I can kind of tell you what we've seen. Let me just pull it up here. He's more smooth in his technique. In other words, he's before, because they were trying to shorten up his stride last year, his technique and his approach to the ball was kind of herky-jerky. And as a result, the ball would kind of go off his foot and it was like, good luck. It's any man's guess where that ball's going to go. Now I think they've gone away from that and they've just, whether they're just adjusting the depth of his, you know, how far back he is before he starts his kickoff, you know, to accommodate the fact that he has long legs or whatever, he just looks like it's more natural to him. Whereas last year, that wasn't always the case. And I think that has helped make a difference with him.
Patty, I'm not sure because I haven't broken down his technique to the point that you have. I just know that, you know, cross your fingers and hope that what we've seen so far this preseason, you know, carries over to the regular season. Because at this point, I think it's pretty clear. I'd be surprised if anyone other than Rosas isn't the week one place kicker for the Giants. But what I do know is he's not going to get the rope that he got last year, where I think his field goal percentage was 72%, which was at or near the bottom of the league. I think, you know, what's going to happen with him is he's going to be on a short leash, you know, once the regular season starts. So, you know, if he misses a couple of big kicks early in the season, I would think the Giants would be looking to move on. So hopefully he has ironed some things out, whether it's, you know, whether it's mentally or physically with the, you know, with the way he's approaching the ball. Because I do believe he'll be on a very short leash, you know, once we get to games that count.
I mean, you don't give up on talent, and the guy has a powerful leg. He's got talent, you know, but you have to ask yourself, you know, was he properly being coached last year? And like I said, I distinctly remember Tom Quinn talking about shortening up his stride. And I'm just not sure how you successfully do that with a kicker that has long legs. If anything, I would think you'd have him maybe start off, you know, a little deeper and just accommodate for the size or the length of the legs. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, I'm not a special teams expert by any stretch of the imagination, but that would, you know, logic would dictate that. But yeah, I think the other thing with Aldrick Rosas that's very important, and we didn't always see last year, is that a lot of times he got frustrated with himself and he got down on himself and let the missed kicks linger longer than they should have. And part of the battle at any position, but especially a kicker, is you have to have a short memory and forget about the previous kick, whether it was good or bad. You have to forget about it and just start mentally preparing yourself for your next kick. And I don't think that Aldrick Rosas did that a lot last year, which is why he hit that streak where he just was abysmal. I mean, he was lucky he wasn't tossed out onto the street last year. But so hopefully, again, he's you know, seen the light on that.
All right, Patty, with that said, you know, lots of things to feel good about. Still a few question marks with the Giants, you know, as we head toward Thursday's final preseason game. We will be back two or three more times during the week with thoughts on the roster, thoughts on the Patriots game, thoughts on anything and everything to do with your New York Giants. We thank you for listening, as always, and we will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye now.